capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to this week's Lever Talk programme. Some say that Britain stumbled into voting to leave the EU in the June referendum. Now it's faced by all sorts of challenges when it comes to actually leaving. Not only is Brexit being constantly challenged by economists and academics expressing grave concern over Britain's post-Brexit prosperity, there's also a real lack of clarity about the very makeup of the UK should the country finally leave. The United Kingdom, as we know it today, may break up. There are two main legal issues at stake, which are now being discussed at Britain's Supreme Court. Firstly, whether the British government can invoke Article 50 without Parliament's approval by referring to the so-called royal prerogative. And second, the crucial decision as to whether legislative consent has to be received from Britain's devolved parliaments in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. If so, this could seriously delay or basically kill the Brexit process. And if it goes through, it could mean finito for the UK itself. Meanwhile, the First Minister for Scotland, leader of the Scottish National Party, Nicola Sturgeon, has recently said that a second referendum is highly likely. Now, to discuss all these issues having completely different point of views, I welcome to the programme David Coburn, MEP, leader of UKIP in Scotland. Hello, David.
Hi, nice to be on.
Paul Monaghan, SNP MP for Caithness, Sutherland and Easter Ross. Hello, Paul.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm very well. I thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today. Now, let's go dive straight in the deep end. What is going to be the decision of the Supreme Court, in your opinion, whether or not the Westminster Parliament has to be engaged before Article 50 can be triggered? I know that contemplating the subject, that they're mulling it over. I think we're waiting for the results in January. In your opinion, what are they going to say? David?
Yeah, but I think that they'd be very hard-pressed to go against the decision of the British people, especially as many of the judges are, well, basically their involvement in the Brexit campaign is questionable, has made their judgments questionable. So they're going to have a lot of trouble coming down against the decision of the British people.
Paul, what do you think?
I disagree with David. I don't think the decision of the Supreme Court is questionable in any respect. I think the Supreme Court is clearly undertaking quite a lot of research and is deliberating carefully on the issue. I think the judgment will be that the UK Parliament does have to be involved in the Brexit decision-making process. I don't think it will be considered good enough for the Prime Minister to make this decision under a royal prerogative. So I think the UK Parliament is going to have a vote on this. The big question, of course, will be what will the vote be about and when will the vote take place?
Yeah, and if it takes place, I presume that before that date, there could be some lobbying amongst the different parties in Westminster to kind of dilute the actual resolution, the law that's going to be passed, the leaving articles. Is that correct, David?
Well, I just don't think the Prime Minister dares to do anything than give us a full Brexit. I think that and a hard Brexit at that, if she wants to keep the Tory party together. Remember, all this is about keeping the Tory party together. UKIP have harried them, we have battered them over the head, we have chased them around the houses, we have made their lives in sheer misery to get the referendum the whole country was expecting and wanting. And the Conservative Party for years have just prevented that happening. Now they've been forced into that position, and she cannot keep a united Conservative Party unless she gives Brexit. Also, when we had the referendum, the referendum's like extending the Parliament. I mean, the Parliament, we send people to Parliament to make decisions. If we go to a referendum, it's enlarging the Parliament. It's everybody taking part in it. And the people want it out. And there's no two ways about it. And we voted as Scotland, as part of the United Kingdom. We'd already decided in the referendum that we were going to remain British. Everybody knew fine well what they were voting for. And we voted to remain, but only 40-60, which is what, 10% off, 50%? It's not that much. It's not a resounding hurrah for the European Union. And since the Scottish government poured the taxpayers' money into brainwashing as hard as it could, the Scots into voting against the European Union, voting for the European Union, rather, then, you know, quite frankly, the result was wonderful.
I mean, everybody I know who knows anything about this legal situation say that the Supreme Court will probably say that, you know, Parliament has to be involved. I think Paul's point is very apt. It depends exactly to what extent and when, because time is crucial, isn't it? As far as the Conservative Party goes, I mean, you're talking about it remaining together, but many Conservative MPs actually want to remain inside the EU. It's not all the Conservative parties want to leave, I think it's the impression you're creating. Paul, back me up here.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think David's analysis there was fundamentally wrong. I think my experience of politics at Westminster at the moment is that the Conservative Party is actually now quite united and is fully supportive of some form of Brexit. I think I would agree with David that that Brexit will be a hard Brexit. The question will be about the role of the devolved nations. Scotland voted decisively, 62-38, to stay in the EU. That is a resounding vote. It's absolutely decisive. The Scottish Government quite rightly have said that they will defend that position and defend the position that the people of Scotland have taken. The idea that somehow this was a UK-wide vote is palpable nonsense. It was a vote based on Westminster rules without the devolved nations having any say in the development of those rules. Scotland has voted differently. We will be doing something different to the rest of the UK. Of that, there is no doubt.
Can I explain something? I had a meeting with the president of the European Parliament, Herr Schulz, and that was after Nicola had her summit with him. She tried to give the impression that Scotland was going to get a different deal. Well, I can tell you, I spoke to Herr Schulz, and there is no deal for Scotland. Scotland entered the European Union as part of the United Kingdom and must leave as part of the United Kingdom. It can then, at some future date, reapply. But it would have to be after they've had a referendum on independence, which they'd have to win, obviously. And also you'd have to have a central bank, which Scotland does not have. Because if we went in, we'd have to accept the catastrophic euro, which has devastated Europe, devastated Greece, bankrupted most of the countries in Europe. And what they want to do, you'd have to accept that. And who wants to do that? We'd also have to come in after Turkey. Well, that's not a very exciting prospect. I don't think the Scots want that either.
Can we just bring a bit of reality to the situation? Scotland's not going to be joining the euro. That is not a fundamental rule, and David knows that very clearly. The second point is that Turkey's not going to be joining the EU anytime soon. Scotland is in a completely different position to Turkey. We don't have to accept the euro, and we will negotiate with the EU to continue our membership and all of the benefits and opportunities that Scotland derives from the EU and actually survives on. Europe is essential to Scotland's future success.
That's not what President Schulz said. He said it is utterly impossible. There will be no deal with Scotland separate from anything else. He said the next thing we'd have is you'd have Spain objecting to it because it would have problems with their minority countries. The whole thing would blow up. The French would be against it, and many of the Baltic countries as well, for the same reason. It will never, ever happen. And all Nicola Sturgeon is doing is destroying the Scottish economy by talking absolute nonsense.
David, if, for example, we do have a situation where this Brexit legislation does actually get through Parliament and the UK leaves the EU, and Nicola Sturgeon calls for another referendum on Scottish independence, and she wins. Now, that would mean that Scotland will then become an independent country and it can reapply to join the EU if it has been asked to leave. That's not certain, is it? It's not just one person says, but they may actually allow Scotland to remain in the EU if only tomorrow they're going to be applying again to another country.
No. That is impossible. President Schulz said that is utterly impossible. It's hogwash. There's no chance of that happening. It's what we call in Scotland havers. There's no way that that's going to happen. It cannot happen. It is illegal. And he is, as the President of the European Parliament said, it is not my business to get into the internal divisions between countries and nation states. That would be improper.
Do you not agree then that means that Scotland will have to leave the United Kingdom and the United Kingdom will break up as we know it today?
No, because you'd have to have an independence referendum. And I can assure you, any independence referendum, it was beaten soundly when we were part of the EU and the UK. If we are out, if Britain is out of the UK, out of the EU rather, I can assure you the Scots will vote absolutely to remain in the UK and not to be part of Europe. This is nonsense. People are not insane. We'd have an international border 50 miles from Edinburgh. You'd have, you know, Berwick-on-Tweed, you'd have a barbed wire and goodness knows all what. That is not good, considering our biggest business partner in the world happens to be England. So in what sense, where's the sense in that?
Well, wait a minute. I mean, actually, it's very good. If you've got any shares in companies that make walls and fences these days, it's a really good thing to be into. Don't forget that Scotland was independent up to 1707.
Well, all I can say is Miss Sturgeon is boosting the economy of Newcastle. All I can tell you is that everybody will be heading south. No one will want to remain in a country that's cutting itself off from the rest of the world. And a country that does not have a currency, and a country that's $7 billion in deficit. The European Union would not want Scotland with a $7 billion deficit. There'd have to be enormous changes.
Let's remain within the parameter of the programme and talking about the possible breakup of the UK. Now, there is a thing called the Sewell Convention, I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly or not, which is an important aspect of the devolution settlement in the Scotland Act, which was passed in March 2016. And this prevents the UK Parliament from legislating on matters which are within devolved competence. So that means that the Supreme Court, it may well say, in regard to the second point of this programme, about the need or the lack of need for Westminster to consult with Scotland. What it's saying, that point is saying, the Sewell Commission is saying that it has to consult with Scotland and the government of Northern Ireland. This is black and white. This is fact, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, it absolutely is fact. The Sewell Convention is an important piece of legislation. It obliges the UK government to consult with the people of Scotland and the Scottish government where it intends to impose legislation on Scotland that relates to a devolved matter. So the Scottish government, the Scottish Parliament is going to be asked. I think it's inconceivable that the Scottish Parliament and the Scottish government would consent to any legislation which would effectively force Scotland to withdraw from the EU against its will. And we need to be absolutely clear that it would be against Scotland's will. I've said already, and it's worth reiterating, that the EU is vitally important to Scotland. The EU is Scotland's largest trading partner, not the rest of the UK. And, you know, we need access to the single market. We need free movement of people. People want to maintain their EU citizenship. All of these things are crucially important to ordinary families in Scotland. And I think that it would be, as I've said, inconceivable, absolutely inconceivable, that either Scotland or Northern Ireland would consent to forcibly being removed against our will from the EU.
David, I can hear a groundswell of you wanting to say something, but let's have a short break before you do.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Programme. Today I'm talking to David Coburn, MEP, leader of UKIP in Scotland, and Paul Managhan, SNP NP for Caithness, Sutherland and Easter Ross, about the continued existence of the UK when and if Britain leaves the EU. David, I think you were just about to say something in regards to Paul's comment about the Sewell Convention.
Yeah, well, number one, international treaties are not a devolved matter. As a matter of fact, the First Minister should not be sticking a nose into any of this stuff at all. Quite frankly, this is a decision by Westminster. This is Westminster's decision, not a decision of the Scottish Parliament. And also
Does the Supreme Court not have a say, though? You know, have the authority?
No, the Supreme Court should have no say whatsoever. The Supreme Court should only be legislating on stuff that's already gone through the House of Commons. It can't think what may go through the House of Commons and say, oh, we don't like it. That's judge-made law, and that's not British. In fact, it's not It's not democratic. The House of Commons makes the decision, that goes, then it goes to the Supreme Court, and then they can say they don't like it. Well, that's their problem. But that they cannot speak. They should never have gone to the High Court. It should never have gone to the Supreme Court. And considering many of the judges on the Supreme Court and in the High Court are compromised because of their attachment to the European Union. So there are great problems here. And it's not for the judges to make laws. It's for the people. And the extension of the House of Commons by the referendum, when everybody voted rather than just delegating their MEPs, delegating their MPs to vote, where everybody voted on the issue, was overwhelmingly for leaving the European Union. And quite frankly, Scotland was part of that. And 40% of the Scots don't want to be part of it.
Thank you, David. Paul?
Yeah, can we? It'd be good to bring some facts to this. I mean, David's conspiracy theories are entertaining, but they're not founded in fact. The devolution settlements for Scotland, for Wales and for Northern Ireland have written through them European human rights legislation. The point of a Sewell Convention is that if the UK government wants to remove Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales from the rest of the EU, it has to change the devolution settlements that have set up the Scottish Parliament and the other devolved assemblies. That means that a Sewell Convention is required because the human rights legislation, if just one aspect of it, will have to be changed. Now, the really interesting aspect comes in when you consider Northern Ireland, because Northern Ireland's devolution settlement also has written through it the Good Friday Agreement, which is an international peace treaty that is registered with the UN. So on human rights alone, the UK government is on very, very shaky ground, and it's very unclear as to how it could proceed with a Brexit, particularly a hard Brexit, if it doesn't have the consent of the devolved assemblies and the Scottish Parliament.
Okay, can I ask you a question, Paul? What happens if the Supreme Court does come out in favour of the government having to consult and get the agreement of the Scottish Parliament and the Northern Ireland government? What will happen then if May goes ahead, nevertheless, and signs Article 50? There will be civil war? I mean, what will actually take place? Who would like to answer that question?
It might fall short of civil war, but it would certainly provoke significant reactions. We need to remember that Theresa May has said here that she will listen to the devolved nations, she will consider their views carefully, and that she will take them into account. Proceeding to drag these countries out of the EU against their will, without recognising their views and without any kind of regard whatsoever to Sewell motions and consents in the devolved assemblies and Scottish Parliament, would be disastrous for the UK. It is not something that would be politically acceptable in a 21st century democratic state. Completely unacceptable, in fact.
Yeah, so in that case, you will have the breakup of the United Kingdom then. Scotland will no longer listen to Westminster's opinion and will start to allege itself its own laws, won't it, David?
We could easily leave by royal prerogative alone. We came into the European Union by royal prerogative. We can leave by royal prerogative. There's no requirement for this. The High Court and the Supreme Court are acting illegally, in my view. They should have no right to interfere in anything that has not already gone through the House of Commons.
Okay, well, this is a constitutional issue. I think we should be very clear what is legal and what isn't legal. You're talking about the Supreme Court. Okay, the Supreme Court is an institution that has been set up in this country a few hundred years ago. It's not something that's been created by Theresa May or her predecessor.
Well, it used to be called the House of Lords before the European Union stopped them there, Ben.
Yeah, but I mean, we live in this system. This is the system that we live in. You can't change it, and I can't change it. Neither can the West government in Westminster.
Yeah, well, but it's wrong, because it's not. This should never have gone before the Supreme Court or the High Court, because they have no right to legislate on stuff that has not already gone through the House of Commons. So their comments were of no interest to anyone.
No, but I mean, this sort of situation should have been thought of before Brexit, you know, by the people who devise these campaigns, including yourself, with all respect.
Well, what should have happened is that Theresa May should have immediately triggered Article 50 straight away, which she didn't do, and these problems would never have arisen.
Well, it was David Cameron. It was David Cameron.
We're out. Mm-hmm.
Paul?
Yeah, I think it's very important that we remember that this whole business is at the Supreme Court because it has been raised as an action by an individual who has received significant funding from and through crowdfunding efforts. So this is a very good example of the people of the UK speaking on this issue and demanding that their voice is heard. The Supreme Court has got every right to consider this issue, particularly because it has been raised by a citizen. Now, David can't have it both ways. He can't say that somehow the referendum is an extension of the House of Commons because the people have joined that debate, and at the same time say that the people can't go to the Supreme Court because they've got no business to do it. It's one or the other, isn't it? It can't be both.
No, that's so absolutely not.
The crucial point is
the Supreme Court is not the House of Commons.
Okay, David.
No, this is nonsense, because the High Court has nothing to do with the Parliament. The decision of the Parliament is supreme. We are not ruled by judges. We are ruled by our representatives in Parliament, not by judges. And they had no right to even comment on this matter until it had gone through the House of Commons. The reason why they've done it is because they knew once it had been, Article 50 had been triggered, there's nothing they could have done about it. And that's why they tried to do it. But quite frankly, it's judges interfering in democracy. Well, that's wrong, and maybe you have to look at how judges are chosen in the future. That's how they behave. But quite honestly, this is absolute nonsense. The decision can be made by the House of Commons. As a matter of fact, the decision could easily be made by royal prerogative, because we entered by royal prerogative. We can leave by royal prerogative.
Well, can I just say, I think David's arguing against himself now. Again, I'd make the point that this action is at the Supreme Court because it has been raised by an individual. And now David's arguing that the House of Commons has got the say over Brexit. The House of Commons hasn't had a say on Brexit. That is why the individual is at the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just take this a little bit wider. What about Northern Ireland? Now, there's rumours that Northern Ireland may sort of want to join up with Scotland, or just sort of somehow get out of this mess. And one way they could get out of it would be to join up with Scotland. What do you think about that, Paul, quickly?
I think it would be an excellent idea. We're already in very close contact with our colleagues in Northern Ireland. I think the people of Northern Ireland, and indeed the people of the Republic of Ireland, are very concerned about the whole Brexit fiasco. It's worth saying that a hard Brexit for Scotland alone would cost 80,000 jobs and reduce incomes by £2,000 per family per year. It's an economic disaster. The people of Northern Ireland know that. The people of Scotland know that, and we've got every right to develop our arguments together to try to bring a little bit of sense to the decisions of the UK government.
Yeah. David, I know you're going to say something. Go on, sir.
Can I just say, 40% of the Scots thoroughly disagree with you. So therefore, I don't understand why you seem to think that that you have a massive majority. 40% of Scots do not agree. And I'm sure if we hadn't had the entire SNP budget being spent on trying to convert people to in favour of voting to remain in the European Union, if we hadn't had that, we'd probably have an even bigger majority. If I had two more weeks, we'd have 50-50 or the other way around. So, quite honestly, this is nonsense.
Well, it was 62-38,
wasn't it?
The
majority of the country and 40% of Scots, that's a lot of people.
Okay, and I think that this conversation is going to turn into a repeat of our pre-Brexit programmes. One of the most amazing things about that whole campaign was the timescale. The population of the British Isles was forced into deciding their future in literally the space of 6 months, which is totally insane, isn't it? And now we're paying the consequences of this. And, you know, we're waiting. David Cameron said we're going to sign Article 50 the next day. That didn't happen. It was postponed. And now Theresa May is saying, you know, well, let's leave it till next March or whatever, you know, and the Supreme Court comes in and says something different. They might really have forgotten about it. But it's not going to be, is it, though, Paul?
No, it's not going to be forgotten about. And I think your wider point is that the UK government have dragged us into this situation without any kind of a plan or strategy as to how we move forward now. David's numbers are just a palpable nonsense. The people of Scotland have voted to stay very clearly in the EU. That has to be respected, as does the view of the people of Northern Ireland and Gibraltar and other places. It's important that together we develop a coherent position on this. I'm talking about Northern Ireland and Scotland. The Scottish Government has already brought forward its paper, Scotland in the EU. The challenge now is for the UK Government to start to recognise the views of the devolved nations, do what Theresa May has already promised to do, which is to consider carefully the views of the people of Scotland and other devolved nations, take them into account and start to act on them. That's the challenge she's got. If she doesn't rise to that challenge, then I think that the UK as a whole is in for a very, very difficult period constitutionally. And I think that the rest of the EU is going to make life very difficult for a UK that chooses to leave the EU. Politically, that cannot be allowed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a very real danger, isn't it? I mean, just as a sort of very slight option, but nevertheless, let's talk about this option. Could the Queen come in at the very last moment?
Well, as I say, more Scots voted to leave the EU than voted for the SNP in the general election. So I think that's pretty clear.
What actually were the figures, Paul? Can you remind us, please, on the referendum? What were the figures?
Well, 62% of the people voted to stay in the EU, mm-hmm. and 38 voted to leave the EU. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a decisive vote in terms of support for the European Union and all of the benefits that we derive from it. And that's exactly what the Scottish Government is acting on.
But we voted as Great Britain. This is the thing you get wrong. We voted as Great Britain, and we decided in the previous referendum that we were British. So there's no argument. The SNP simply cannot get over the fact they were beaten in the referendum on Scottish independence. And it is finished. And they know fine well. They're drowning men clutching at razor blades because they know quite well that if Brexit goes through, that's the end of Scottish nationalism. It's just an absolute end of it all. And that's why they're so absolutely desperate. And considering the disaster they've been making of the Scottish economy, the Scottish education system, and everything else, they're about to get a good kicking from the general public in Scotland at the forthcoming elections.
Last question, before we're going to close the programme. The election in America, President-elect Trump, how is this going to change Scottish politics and the future of the UK? Anybody got any ideas? Start with you, David, please, for a change. Go ahead.
Yes. The First Minister, her predecessor, spent a great deal of their time being unpleasant about the leader or someone who's potentially the leader of the free world. And they made a mess of it. The last thing you do is go around insulting businessmen who are pouring money into Scotland. My constituents in Scotland are more interested in jobs than the SNP's sort of student revolutionary politics. No one's interested in that. People need jobs, and people like President Trump will bring jobs to Scotland. Anybody who goes around making light of that is a fool.
Wow, it's just amazing how you talk to different people, you get a completely different perspective on things. The last time I was in Scotland, I couldn't help notice all the bridges and things that have been built by EU money and all the money that's coming in from Brussels, actually. But, Paul...
The bridges are not built by EU money. They're built by British taxpayers' money. They've been given to the EU. They gave it back to us. And let me say that the Forth Road Bridge was falling down because nobody was looking after it properly. So that's a nonsense. Nothing's been built by the EU. The EU has no money. It only has taxpayers' money. And the only contributors to the EU are Britain and Germany. So it's German and British taxpayers' money. So we're basically getting our own money. We're being bribed with our own money. It's nonsense.
Okay, Paul, please, last comment. The effect of the American elections on this whole situation with the UK staying together.
I think David's arguments are frankly incoherent, but I think the bigger issue here is that the UK and indeed the US have a diminishing influence in the world now. I think that's linked to the fact that both of these states are moving to the right. The people are voting for change to some extent. The crucial aspect is that if the UK wants to be influential in the world, it has to do that through the EU. Unfortunately, Brexit will cost jobs. I've said that already. In Scotland alone, 80,000 jobs. Donald Trump's not going to be replacing those jobs in any way. And it's equally the case that the Brexit vote is going to lead to a UK that is poorer. It is going to lead to a UK that is isolated in the world. And it is going to lead to a UK that is, I think, struggling to maintain the relationship that it once had with the US. We are looking at a time of momentous change, and the Scottish Government is working very hard to mitigate all of that and make sure that the people of Scotland are kept safe, secure, and that our economy is protected.
Listeners, you're extremely lucky to have these two gentlemen talking to you today, offering completely different perspectives. You make up your mind. You've heard the evidence. Thank you, David Coburn, MEP, leader of UK, of UKIP in Scotland, and Paul Monaghan, SNP MP for Caithness, Sutherland and Easter Ross. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.